What is your favorite or the best play on words using your last name that you've heard?
That ball got Schmidt on.
Oh! On 95.7 The Game.
That was Casey Schmidt, who was in the lineup last night for the Giants. Is not tonight. No Schmidt in the lineup. It's Wade, Ramos, Bailey, Chapman, Conforto, Fitzgerald, Yastrzemski, Luciano, and Wisely. Backing up Logan Webb, who's facing off against Ross Stripling for the A's tonight as the Giants try to get even against the Oakland A's, and they desperately need this one. Not a must-win, according to Dibs, but what did you call it, Dibs?
It's a very important game. It's a really important game.
It's a rig. Yep. A rig, not a must-win for the Giants tonight. That's at 6:45. We'll be all over it tomorrow, of course, here on 95.7 The Game. Welcome back to Willard and Dibs. It's Dan Dibley, FP Santangelo, Mark Randy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. And let's go out to our guest line. And of course, all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? And we go out to former Giants general manager, of course, has been in the front office, was in the front office for the Giants for a very long time. That is none other than Bobby Evans. Bobby, thanks so much for taking out the time. We appreciate you joining us today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Those River Islands are beautiful out there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I was out there looking at some high school prospects at a national tournament, and they do it right. It looks great.
Any good prospects out there? What'd you come away with?
Yeah, I mean, the class of 25, actually class of 26, looks even better for high school talent. And Northern California is producing some big boys. So it looks pretty good. I think the kids that we were looking at were trying to put together a final event for Fenway Park and ultimately at Minute Maid Park later in the year. And we're selecting some top guys for it. So it was good.
Awesome. Well, maybe we'll see some of them in the orange and black at some point down the road.
Exactly.
We'll see.
That's the idea.
Yesterday, the trade deadline across baseball, Bobby, and I know you're very experienced and you know how all these things work. The San Francisco Giants made a couple of moves. You saved some money, got rid of Jorge Soler, Luke Jackson, Alex Cobb. You bring in Mark Canna, but generally, for the most part, didn't do a lot to help this team win. Just generally speaking, how difficult is it at the trade deadline to make a major move that a lot of Giants fans were hoping for and were searching for and felt like this team needed? Because ultimately, you need another team on the other end to be willing to part with whatever you so desperately want. As a general manager, as someone who's spent so much time in baseball front offices, how difficult is it to make a really ground-shaking move at the trade deadline?
You know, it's harder and harder. I mean, I think that everybody's looking at the same numbers, looking at the same contracts, you know, in very similar boats in terms of, you know, the financial wherewithal at this time of year. You know, the fact is there's so many teams that are kind of still in it potentially. And so it makes, you know, clubs hesitant to give up, you know, players where, you know, when there was, you know, one wild card or two wild cards, now there's three. I mean, there's just more opportunities for clubs to sneak in. And so it's harder to give up your best players, to, you know, even if you are an outside chance, it's just harder to give up those best guys. So you're going to hold on to them. And at the same time, you know, clubs value prospects higher than ever before. And so it puts every team at a disadvantage to try to get some of the top guys away from these clubs because, you know, they're not going to want to trade a top 100 major league prospect or, you know, or even your top, you know, five or sometimes even out of your top 10 in this time of year. So it is a challenge. And, you know, I think when you're not sure if you're in, but you know, you're not out, it puts you in a very, you know, precarious decision-making mode. And I think that, you know, the guys in the front office just had to navigate that yesterday. And I think they came away with at least holding on to Snell, which will give you something to look forward to the rest of this season. But it does make it harder to know what to expect for the future with Snell in terms of, you know, him probably opting out. And, you know, if he doesn't take us into some sort of pennant drive, it kind of makes you wonder what could have been, right, if we had traded them. But we all know that the offerings are just probably not as rich as you'd like.
Bobby, FP here. How you doing?
Hey, great, FP. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear yours, too. Before I get to my question, can you tell all the listeners who the greatest hitting coach in the history of the San Jose Giants was?
Santangelo rings a bell for me.
No, that's why I'm talking to you right now, because I was probably the worst hitting coach in the history of the San Jose Giants. Bobby,
no, you believed in players, and that means a lot. Those kids, they get better for people that believe in them. So don't sell yourself short.
I did. I was the guy that stood up for the little guy in the meetings when all the other coaches were like, I love our first round pick, and I'm like, well, what about this guy over here? He's a good player.
And there you go.
Maybe that was a little too personal. Bobby, as a general manager, can you get caught up in the last four or five games before a trade deadline when you're kind of the team on the fence and get over enamored with a sweep maybe? Or is it just like you better have your plan ready? Or is it I have A, B, and C plans going to the trade deadline and it could change game day?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can ride the ups and downs of a given series or four or five games, but you know, under Sabian, we never did that. I mean, I think Brian had his mindset where we were. Sometimes it felt like, you know, June 30th. You know,
wow. So
you know, he would anticipate, you know, kind of where things stood, and we were able to see the writing on the wall. I mean, I think the hard part, you know, is to, you know, for us was that we always had a desire to make sure that the guys in the clubhouse knew we were behind them, even when they were kind of in the murky zone, you know. And so we wanted to see, Brian would always say, we want to see something from them so that we're ready for, you know, an opportunity to support them. And we want to see some drive or some push on their end. And invariably we did. And so it was always a mindset to add. When we were obviously out, it wasn't gray. I mean, it was clear. We didn't obviously have a lot of times we were three wild cards, but you know, it was obvious when we needed to, you know, hold pat or sell. So, but it can get hard. I mean, when you have a nice run right before the deadline, four straight wins, I mean, that gives you some temptation to say, hey, maybe we can get that third wild card.
Former Giant GM Bobby Evans here on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned being in that murky spot. Does the third wild card make it more difficult for teams, not only the Giants, but all teams that are kind of in that middle spot to really be definitive about what they do at the deadline?
Oh, yeah, it totally changes everything because there's so many, there's more teams that have a shot. And, you know, you watch what the D-backs did last year. Or, you know, I mean, even, you know, I mean, the Cardinals back in the day, you know, went to the postseason with 82 wins, although I think they won the division that year with 82 wins. But, you know, there's always that chance. Once you get in, anything can happen. And so it makes it harder to look your fan base in the eye and say, hey, you know, we're out. We're going to sell. But meanwhile, you know, then you come out of the deadline and you win 5 of 7 and suddenly you're like, what do we do? You know, and the D-backs a couple of years ago did that. They got rid of some guys and kind of, you know, gave up on the team and I think they regretted it. And I think it's part of the reason they hung in there last year.
Bobby, I think a lot of fans think that as a GM, you just have carte blanche to do whatever you want and then you'll report to ownership. Can you explain how a trade deadline or maybe even a free agent signing goes down where you have to report to ownership and run everything by everybody? Maybe the levels of how this thing goes behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think you go into the deadline knowing really what your flexibility is financially. You also know, you know, what the upside and downside is financially. If we do invest more, what the downside is. If we don't invest more, you know, what the upside is. And you're in conversations from a big picture standpoint. But, you know, at times, I mean, we would have deadlines where we never saw Peter McGowan in the room. And then we'd have deadlines where, you know, Bill Newcomb or Larry Bear sat in with us. And so it varies considerably depending on club to club. And I know that I think players appreciate the presence of ownership, the presence of team presidents in the clubhouse and around the team to see that they care enough to be around. I think we feel similarly in the baseball operations department when our team president or ownership, you know, is present and available and interacting with us about the big names or decisions that we have. The check-in, but they don't normally stay in the room, and you have your boundaries and you have your kind of your premise of what you're looking to do. And as things begin to advance, you know, by the end of every day, you're kind of updating and talking and discussing. Obviously, too, your big league manager is involved in that as well.
Bobby Evans, Giants GM, former Giants GM with us here on 95.7 The Game on Willard and Dibbs. Bobby, I know you've been a part of a lot of deadlines and a lot of big names acquired, traded away. I think back to 2011, obviously Carlos Beltran, it didn't work out for the team as a whole, but the next year you get Hunter Pence. He helps you win two World Series. I'm wondering if, as a leader in the Giants organization, and we've seen for years now how difficult it is for this franchise to acquire on the free agent market a big power hitter, and if it's because of the ballpark or whatever reason, the reason doesn't really matter. As a leader in this organization, knowing what you know about that difficulty, do you feel perhaps a little bit more pressure to maybe put your chips in the middle of the table and try and go out and get a power hitter when, for lack of a better phrase, they don't really have a choice where they're going? They're not making up their mind themselves. Their team is trading them. Do you feel maybe a little bit more pressure and willingness to part with something valuable from your own roster, from your own organization, to go and get that big bat in here that way as opposed to in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did it, you know, during our time. I mean, I think that's why we went out and got Beltran. That's why we went out and got Hunter Pence, because we knew how hard those guys would be to get on a free agent market. But we also, not just because of any one thing, it's just there's a lot of interest in big hitters out there, and there's clubs out there that will pay, exorbitantly more sometimes than guys are worth. I mean, we saw a winter where there was five or six really good bats on the market, and every one of them got 1 year, 2 years more with, sometimes $3, $5, and $7 million more per year than you would anticipate. And so it's a market that you can't control. And so, yeah, when you have a chance to trade for guys at a deadline, it's an advantage. And when you have control years, like we did in the Hunter Pence case, made it even more exciting.
So I'm going to ask this question a little bit long, so give you time to think about it. Do you have any good trade deadline stories, like lift the curtain back stories where it was gnarly and it was last minute and you pulled off a deal that maybe all of us remember?
Well, I mean, I do remember the 13 deadline, just as one example of which is nothing like what you're describing, and which we're at the hotel, the Ritz in Washington, D.C. We're playing the Nationals, and we've set up camp there, and we can't get any reception in the room. So every negotiation with every club seems like you have to step outside into the parking lot front lobby to get reception. And we're really holding pat. I mean, that's our winner. That's our break. Our trade deadline. We're going to hold pat unless somebody blows us away. And so, whether they're talking to us about Hunter Pence or they're talking to us about Lopez, whoever they want to talk to us, we'll listen. But you got to blow us away. And to Brian's credit, nothing, blew us away, and we held pat. And so I was talking with Javi Lopez about this, during the Core Four visit recently. And, and there he was, such a big part of winning the next one, as was Hunter Pence. And so, thankfully nobody did offer us anything that could draw our guys away from us. But, I mean, I think the fun part of the deadline is whenever you can add, a difference maker, and there's none better than the difference makers that we got in Freddie Sanchez. Ended up a year earlier in 2009, and then obviously Hunter Pence, in 2012. And I think Jake Peavy was an incredible addition. I mean, he wasn't exactly lighting it on fire in Boston, but we knew we had a chance at him, and with Bochy's relationship and all his past success, we were excited to get him. I mean, it wasn't like there was a ton of clubs fighting for him necessarily, because he really wasn't pitching well, and he came in and lit fire and carried us. So always fun at the deadline.
This is no joke. You know why you didn't get reception is because you were by the Pentagon. 100%. Cell phones don't work around.
You're right.
Cell phones
you're
don't
right.
work around there, man. So you guys stayed at the wrong hotel.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, sometimes different things, different circumstances turn out to be the best thing for you. And so I can't help but think about this deadline and maybe standing pat, for the most part, for the Giants will work out based on how this rotation does down the stretch. But if you're in Farhan's spot and there's a little bit of pressure, does that somehow affect what you're trying to do at the deadline? Or do you have to put your own personal situation out of your mind when you're trying to make moves at the deadline?
I mean, I think you have to always put your personal situation off to the side. I think if you're worried about your personal situation, then you're compromised leadership. And I, I, I don't believe in putting your situation ahead of what's best for the club tomorrow or the next day or years ahead. And I know that, you know, that's a hard thing for ownership to understand sometimes, that, you know, the GMs or team presidents are human. And you know, obviously the reason that you give multi-year deals, you know, to your front offices, so they don't have to worry about tomorrow. They know that they have, you have some security. Even if they make a change, you've got some security. And I think, you know, I know there's a lot of comments made about Preller making some big deals in San Diego to try to save his job. And I think Preller's been making big deals every year trying to win that championship. So whether this was a career saving or job saving trade for him, I don't know. But I think that if you ever get that kind of distraction, it really would affect your judgment. I don't think that's good for anybody.
Former Giants GM Bobby Evans with us here on Willard and Dibs, Dibs FP and Grandy with you. Bobby, I'm curious. I'm not implying that Farhan, a day after the deadline, feels like he made a mistake, but I'm curious, how quick do you maybe regret your decision that you made at any given deadline? The Giants yesterday ultimately, for the most part, kind of stand pat, and they followed up with kind of a lifeless loss to the Oakland A's, and obviously we don't want it to happen, but there's a chance that the bottom falls out, and you're looking at, well, maybe we could have done something to help this team, or maybe we could have recouped value for a player that might be opting out. What's the quickest that you've, in your experience, regretted the decisions that you and the franchise made at the deadline? And what do you think Farhan and company are going through over these next handful of days?
I think every day can be a day of, we made the right decision, or, I watched that play, and, I made the wrong decision, you know. So I think it can change play to play, game to game, your game to watching the guys that you traded as well go off or do well. So I think it's part of human nature. I mean, you're trading major league players. You know, they're going to perform, you know, and, you know, by getting rid of a guy or not adding a guy, you've always got that risk that they're going to perform and make you wish something had been done differently. But I think when you digest the information that we digest in those rooms, at some point you've got to make a call, and you got to make a tough call. And ultimately, you know what you got offered, and you also know what you didn't get offered and what you should have gotten offered, or what you could have gotten, but what it would have cost you. So, you know, it's human nature, but it's not something you let haunt you. You try to move on and try to get the next W and put yourself in a position to, you know, to get that wild card, whatever it is, 1, 2, or 3.
Mm. Good stuff, Bobby. Hey, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you next time.
All right, guys. My pleasure.
Talk See to you, Bobby. Night.
Thanks, Bobby. That's former GM of the San Francisco Giants, Bobby Evans, with us here on 95.7 The Game. And as always, all guests appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. Well, Bobby Evans peeling the curtain back a little bit. It's difficult. It's something that we've heard Mike Dunleavy and Joe Lacob say, trades are hard. Trades are hard. Bobby Evans saying the same thing as well.
Especially now where you have three wild cards and you've got 12 teams that make the playoffs, which is 40% of all of baseball are going to be playoff teams. So you look beyond the 40% and you take another 40% of the league that thinks we still have a shot with 54 games to go. That leaves 20% of the league as legitimate sellers, which is six teams. So you've got six teams that are probably looking to sell. And if you look around baseball this year, not including Tampa Bay, a team that, you know, probably shouldn't have been a seller, but they are always a seller when they're in this spot. It's just Tampa Bay. But you look at Chicago, a team that's way, way out of it. They sold. Detroit sold a bunch of pieces. And you look across baseball, and there were only a few, three or four or five teams that sold multiple good players, and even teams that
Marlins sold,
right? Yeah. Teams that were out of it, like not a lot of them sold their stars. And I know the Marlins sold their best hitter back in May, which was not a trade deadline deal, but
then they sold Jazz Chisholm, and then they sold Brian De La Cruz, and then they sold Trevor Rogers, they sold their closer.
You didn't get into a spot where a lot of big time marquee players on really bad teams were even sold. So I think the deadline this year was even tougher than ever.
They should sell their team.
The Marlins?
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Just or do what you always do, stink for 10 years and then win the World Series.
And then sell everybody after that.
They've got more World Series since they've been a team than the Los Angeles Dodgers. So what are we doing here?
Yeah, I have
facts,
no idea.
By the way.
I have no idea.
They got two the Dodgers have won since the Marlins became a team in the 90s.
The Dodgers one doesn't count. 60-game season.
Why?
Because they
60-game season, dude. We play 162 games for 6 months. The grind, the physical, the mental grind of it.
I get that, but you know there was a pandemic, and baseball decided that they were going to have a postseason anyway, and the Dodgers won it. I bristled at that, because if your Giants would have won that championship, you never once would have said that doesn't count. It's Dodger hatred. Mark Willard does it. Now you're doing it, and I won't stand for it.
Okay. I'll say whatever. This.
And it's only because it's the Dodgers.
I was around a team that won the World Series the year before, and talking to the players in the clubhouse, their only goal was to not get hurt that year. They were playing baseball not to get hurt. And then they were asking their friends how they're going about it. And the managers of other teams were telling players, just don't get hurt. This is a joke. We're playing in front of cardboard cutouts. We're piping in noise to the ballpark. And they ambushed us with the season, and now we got to go for 60 games because there's a pandemic and people want an escape. Don't get hurt. That's all the managers were telling their players, is don't get hurt. If you talk to the Dodgers and some of their coaches, they'll say this was a harder World Series to win because we had to spit in a cup every day, and we had to wear masks on the bus, and we had to wear masks in the clubhouse. And come on, dude. That whole season was a freaking joke. So I'm not taking it away from the Dodgers. Somebody had to win. But that entire 2020 season in Major League Baseball was an absolute joke.
Right.
It was.
But they still have rings with diamonds and rubies and other baubles, I'm sure. And
for 60 games. They played 60 games.
It's not the first time that Major League Baseball has had a shortened season.
And Justin Turner ran out on the field without a mask on.
What is he doing?
Oh, my God. He should have ran out there naked. It would have been better.
Would have been better with a mask on.
I'll just put it this way. If there was ever a World Series for the Dodgers to win, I'm glad it was that one.
Me too,
I'm
Randy.
Glad it was that one. Of course, I'd prefer it was none, but I'm glad it was that one. If it had to be one. 888-957-9570. We got time for a call before we hit a quick break. Up next is Mike in Santa Clara. Mike, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs, FP, and Grandy. How you doing, Mike?
What up, guys? Wow, I have to follow up Bobby Evans.
Yeah, so, no pressure.
Thanks a lot, guys. I was actually talking about, look, and the caller a while ago, Patrick, made a good point about what is the ownership doing in this factor. I can't put the full blame on Farhan in this case. As much as I can't stand the guy because of the moves, it made me start wondering, after Patrick even said that, what is ownership doing to not open up the goddamn checkbook at this point? And what I actually am really upset about is, why couldn't we make a splash move? And I'm putting his name out there because it was big talk at the time, you know, to try to get Vladdy, just throw the freaking house to Vladdy. And the problem is that, yeah, you can have all the pitching you want, but if the pitching will get you there, but you don't have the runs, you know, you need the bats at the same time. So where are you going to get that? And then if you don't have the, like, if we were to have landed, for example, again, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it could have also opened up the door for bringing additional players in for bats at the same time. So I'm just, it's very disrespectful, disheartening, and insulting if the ownership is part of the problem in this, if not the biggest problem in this, of putting in the way of Giants fans. I've been a fan for 35 plus years now. I was born in 84 put 5 years in there since I started watching baseball. But like, just being a Giants fan for that long and just going through this, it's very insulting to see this at this point. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Mike. I think you used a good word, disheartening. I feel that way about these Giants at times as well. I will say it would have been really, really difficult to go out and acquire Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's a reason why so many teams want him, because he's a very, very good baseball player. And the Blue Jays, they probably want to keep him if they don't get the crazy good package that they were asking for. And they didn't get it. They're going to hold on to him. Maybe they re-sign him after next year. Maybe they let Bo Bichette walk. Who knows? But I do agree, Mike, at the very least. It would be awesome to have Vladdy as a San Francisco Giant, but that's not the way it worked out. All right, time for a break. We're sponsored by Safeway. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs, FP, and Grandy with you. More coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard. Willard and Dibs.
Absolute pleasure. Willard and Dibs, y'all take it easy. Have a good one. Enjoy the game tonight.
On 95.7 The Game.
Hey, that was Hunter Pence. Hunter Pence, a deadline deal acquisition for the Giants back in 2012. 12 years ago? Now it doesn't seem like it's been 12 years.
That deal started in the All-Star game 2 years before that.
When he was an Astro being traded to the... He was... One year he was an Astro, traded to the Phillies. The next year he was a Philly, traded to the Giants.
Bruce Bochy was his All-Star manager and said, we need to get a guy like Hunter Pence. And then 2 years later, they did.
And the rest is history.
You got to do your Bochy when you tell stories about Bochy.
I don't have a Bochy.
You
I got
do.
A Felipe. I got a Felipe.
Let's hear it.
I'm on down. No, I'm good.
Come on.
Dude, I was thinking about
Mark
this.
Mark does his Bochy, and it's funny because it always starts with a...
He's an idiot.
It starts with a series of grunts and grumbles, which is probably not totally accurate.
Those are can't do that.
Two of the best managers ever in the history of the game. But, yeah, I was thinking about this during the break, Dibs, and you're the fact checker here. Maybe everybody can help
you
us.
You call me fat?
No, fact.
Oh.
I'm a fat.
No, just kidding. I'm a fat. I don't know if pumpkin. Granny's on fire over there. No, I got drops too, Grandy.
I'm a fat red pumpkin.
That used to be a fat red pumpkin.
Yeah, but now you lost 30 pounds. I just heard your commercial.
25 and counting.
Good
Thank
job,
you.
Dude.
Appreciate it.
Keep barking.
Not all of us can be not all of us can be perfectly chiseled with a, you know, ideal beard and the rest of it. But keep, tell your story.
Keep sticking your finger down your throat.
Sure. That's mean spirit.
Wow.
That's just
get on with it. What did you want to ask everyone, FB? Seriously.
I was wondering.
Can I do me one favor and now you can just browbeat me? Still waiting, but go ahead.
In the history of Major League Baseball, how many offseason multi-year contract signs were traded 3 months later at the trade deadline? Like, you go out.
You're asking this because of what happened with Jorge Soler.
Yeah, well, yes. you go out and you have a great, you sign a big bat and you're, and then you trade him 2.5 months, 3 months later. Like, how many times that happened to a multi-year deal? Like, you're making a 3 or 4 or 5, whatever this case may be, not with Soler, but other ones, commitment to somebody. They're making a commitment to you. You're buying houses in the area. Your kids are going to the school and then you get traded at the trade deadline. Like, when has that ever happened before? Maybe the next year, maybe you underperform, whatever, 2 years into the deal, you're just wearing out your welcome. But that quick to sign somebody to a multi-year deal and then flip the script April, May, June, July, 4 months later. That's
four
weird.
Months into a multi-year contract.
Has that ever happened? And if it has, I'm guessing it's happened less than a handful of
times.
I'm
sure it has happened, but I'm thinking about this organization and it makes me think about this situation, because it's not like Jorge Soler was a bad actor, bad clubhouse guy, and it's not like he was in a funk. He was actually trending the other way, where it looked like he'd gotten comfortable in the leadoff spot. It looked like he'd started to find his power stroke. It looked like he was going to be, you know, a mainstay of the offense in the second half. So I think about all those things, and yes, you want to create opportunity for younger players. I get that, and I take him at his word. But this one felt to me more like, geez, we spent more for Soler than we wanted to. He didn't produce quite as much as we wanted him to, so let's get out of his money. It's not like getting out of the player. I think they wanted to get out of his money and have more optionality, another word that we've grown to hate. They wanted more financial optionality going into next year. That's the way I read this move. But you're right, FP. You signed a guy to a three-year deal, and he's one of your big prized offseason free agent pieces, and you wanted a slugger and you found a slugger and he was starting to trend in the right direction and you trade him at the deadline. That does feel to me like a financial move.
Yeah, but that's the first thing I thought. My knee jerk when that trade happened was that came from up top.
Right. Like they went to Farhan and said, look, Farhan, we gave you the checkbook in March and it's not working. You got to cut.
Save us some money.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sick of seeing him swinging at sliders in the dirt.
And it's part of it. I mean, if he was hitting 320 with 20 home runs, and even if the team sold the same record, you're probably not cutting that money. You might cut different money, but you're not cutting his money. I mean, it was a combination of saving some money and an underperforming player.
Just weird. Like, you go out and you make a commitment, and then all of a sudden, things aren't going right, and you trade the guy. Like, I didn't see that trade coming. There, I thought maybe Yaz. I thought maybe Conforto because there was interest by the Mets. I thought maybe Blake Snell for a big haul. I thought Camilo Duvall might be attractive to some teams in the pennant race.
Some of the other reliever arms. I thought
all these things. I did not see Jorge Soler coming at all. At all. And I saw some people on Twitter that retweeted their tweets and saw it coming. I didn't. I didn't see that one coming because, in my defense, I don't know in all of my years in baseball that I can remember a guy being signed to a multi-year contract in the offseason, free agent signing, that spent 4 months in a place.
Well, I think that's also, and it's a really good point, and I think that's also what is, I don't know, frustrating to Giants fans is if it was indeed, as Dibs was talking about and is how you first read it, if it was a directive from up top, it was the Johnson saying, hey, Farhan, save some money. And Farhan said, well, let's see what I can do here. Well, Jorge's underperforming. Maybe the Braves won him because he won a World Series with them and it all worked out. If your goal was save some money, that leads into what Dave Fleming was talking about earlier this week on the morning, or earlier this morning with Bonte and Shasky on the morning roast. It makes you feel like a second-rate franchise, a franchise that is quabbling over a few million dollars when you are making and you're worth billions and you're no shortage of cash, no shortage of making money with this organization. And meanwhile, you look at who you would like to be compared to and who Giants teams, franchises, organizationally have been compared to for years, the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox and all these other top-rate organizations. What do? They go out there and they buy and they spend more money and they're not caring about what the luxury tax bill is. And they're not worried about that. The Dodgers go out and they get Jack Flaherty, maybe the best pitcher that was on the market that ultimately was traded. He's now a Dodger. The Yankees were eager and they added some pieces. They go out and get Jazz Chisholm, who's at 4 home runs in his first 3 games. And the Giants are looking at it. Giants fans are looking at it saying, well, all we did was save a little bit of money and turn it over to our youngsters who are not even sure if they're going to be good enough to lead us to anything. That's where the frustration comes from. And where Fleming is right, that this feels like a second-rate organization.
And that's where I look at when we talk about second-rate. And FP, your defense of the organization and the franchise more than the organization, the overall brand and the franchise and the ballpark and the city and the history and all that, you're spot on. But I look at a move like this where you sign a guy, you give him 3 years, pretty good money, and then after 4 months, you send him out. I wonder what message that sends to other free agents, potential free agents. Sorry. If I'm a slugger, no, you can always cut me off to agree with me. I like that because you're a former major league player.
You're flat out wrong, Dibs.
Then you're going to have to wait your turn. But I do wonder if you're another free agent and you think about, man, Soler was there for 4 months. And yes, they traded him to a place where, and Farhan even said this, like, you know, we knew that he was comfortable in Atlanta and we try to do right by players if we can. It's not the number one priority, but if we can, we're going to do that. And, you know, they sent Cobb back to a place where he had been, right?
That is cool. That's classy and a pro move, by the way.
It is.
You don't have to do that.
But it also makes you want, why would any free agent in the future sign a multi-year contract with you? I mean, do what Chapman and Snell did, sign 1+1. You have the player option for the next year, and you can figure that out yourself.
You can, but maybe that wasn't an option for Soler, but I just wonder about free agent next year if Farhan is still here, and we don't know if he's going to be able to keep his job, but if you're a free agent slugger and Farhan calls, maybe, what did you do to Soler? You know, are you going to give me the Soler treatment where I'm going to be here till the deadline and then I'm going to get shipped out? I don't know if it's necessarily a great optic for an upcoming free agent cycle.
Yeah. You don't, I'm not moving my family there. I don't know.
Exactly. Maybe it's a rental.
If I'm worried that I'm going to be moving somewhere else in 6 more months after I sign, then.
But I will say in Farhan's defense and the Giants' defense that I can't think of that ever happening ever. Before.
Well, on the text line, the Xfinity mobile text on the 925 points out, this isn't quite the same thing. It is similar. Mitch Haniger was traded the very next offseason after he signed a multi-year contract.
Well, that's still not at the trade deadline.
Not at the trade deadline, but it's close.
This is the thanks.
It's only a couple more months after the trade deadline.
That's like, thanks for coming. You were a GIA, not a GIANT.
Yeah, and I don't think that is necessarily the biggest indictment of Farhan, but I do think that it is kind of an admission that it wasn't a success, the signing, because if Soler was great, then, you know, you probably wouldn't have wanted to trade him at the deadline, even though it was a financial move. You would have tried a different financial move to save some dollars.
I also think it's important, and we've all touched on it a little bit here, but so much of the Giants fan frustration, and I'm guilty of this too. I mean, you guys sitting in here with me the last 3 days, you know how I feel about this all. So much of this anger and frustration is directed to Farhan and to Farhan alone.
We got to blame somebody.
You got to find someone to blame. And I mean, he's the president of the baseball operations. That comes with the territory as well.
Society, we got to blame.
It comes with the territory. But as Dibs, as you've pointed out, and FP, as I think you agree with, this feels like it was a directive from up high. And Farhan's just carrying out orders. And this is a situation where you go into the deadline. And I think the reason why so many Giants fans are frustrated and it was split, do you buy, do you sell? I know you hate those two distinct paths because it's more down the middle in reality. But there wasn't an easy answer for Farhan or for the Giants in general. And any of us that were in that position might not have been able to do anything better than what Farhan ultimately did. And maybe he's just following orders to save his life anyway. Farhan is the easy target, but let's not pretend that he had an easy solution to fix all of this. If it was easy, he would have done it. They're in a really tough spot. And sure, maybe you can blame some of the decisions and moves that he's made over the last 5 years to get to this bad spot. But in this moment, something you were talking about earlier, what else could you really have done at this stage once you were already in this position?
Agreed. And I think that, you know, you're in a spot where you weren't one player or two players or three players away from catching the Dodgers or the Phillies. Ultimately, best case scenario, you make it into the wild card and your rotation is good enough and healthy enough to where you can win a couple of those short series, and who knows? You can catch lightning in a bottle. Arizona last year, nobody saw them as being the National League pennant winner, and they did it with young players and a couple of great pitchers at the top, and they got hot in September and October. And
they're getting hot again right now.
Right. Look, so if you're the Giants, and there isn't a big move or two moves or three moves out there that you would sell the farm for, your only hope, in my opinion, is ride with what you got, let some of the young guys come up and maybe produce, and, you know, you can hopefully catch that third wild card, and then who knows with this rotation.
You know, something just hit me when you were talking about how signing a guy and then trading him at the trade deadline might influence other people in free agents. How about this a step further? You finally sign a hitter. You finally sign a big bat.
And he's the one who wanted to come here. He signed a 3-year deal.
In a ballpark that's not conducive to hitting, and you finally break that barrier, and then you flip it and trade him at the trade deadline.
Well, it's also,
so how is any other slugger going to want to sign here based on the ballpark? Ball doesn't carry. And based on you finally signed one, but you traded him right away. Like this to me is worrisome in the sense that what other slugger is going to want to sign with the Giants now?
I could take it even a step further.
Let's do it.
Jorge Soler, who hit 40 home runs in his in a single season in the past, and most recent year last year with the Marlins hit, what, like 35? And he is like, at a certain point early in his Giants tenure, I don't want to hit middle of the order here. I want to lead off. You see a guy who's hit 30-plus home runs multiple times in his career, and all he wants to do as a Giant is lead off?
You know what I saw, like, with the trained eye? That he was trying to hit home runs because he was in a park that wasn't conducive to hitting home runs. So what do? I remember Paul Goldschmidt had this problem with the Diamondbacks when they used the humidor all of a sudden. Hmm. And Goldschmidt was trying to really generate. And he came out of his swing, and he was pulling off sliders. And he was really struggling in Arizona, ballpark Chase Field, where the ball flies. But the Diamondbacks that first year really soaked their balls in the humidor, and it sounded like the ball sounded like crap coming off the bat. And he felt like he needed to generate more pop than just swinging, you know, your natural swing. And I wonder if Soler, if you asked him behind the scenes, was really trying to generate more power than he needed to because he felt like he was playing in a ballpark that wasn't conducive to the ball flying. So now I got to swing harder. I come out of my plan. I'm swinging at sliders away, which if you're in a nice ballpark like Atlanta where the ball flies, not a nice ballpark, but a ballpark conducive to hitting. This is a beautiful ballpark, but a ballpark conducive to hitting where you just that easy swing is getting home runs. And you don't have to over-swing, over-generate, pull off the baseball. You just take that nice, easy swing and the ball goes.
Jorge Soler, 4 home runs at home this year.
There you go.
And 160 at-bats out of the 12. Yeah. 8 road, 4 home, and he had 160 at-bats, so that's 1 in every 42 plate appearances.
It's hard
at home.
It's hard to hit
42 at-bats, yeah.
It's hard to hit sliders in the left-handed batter's box for home runs, and that's all he swung at.
Right.
Well, that's all that they were pitching to him because they knew he was swinging at him.
Well, even if you're swinging at fastballs that are middle of the plate, it's hard to drive those out of Oracle Park anyway.
Well, and if you're overswinging, you guys have overswung in baseball before. You guys have overswung in golf before. It tightens up your muscles, and tight muscles aren't quick muscles, and all of a sudden you start to degenerate. And if you looked at his swing all year, it was really upper half. It was all shoulders and swinging with his upper half, and there was no hands involved. And finally he started getting the foot down. It was more of a handsy swing where he wasn't trying to generate all this power with his torso, and I think he might have been overswinging because of the ballpark.
It's possible.
And if you're another big name free agent, one, you see his struggles, and two, you see the Giants ship him off just 4 months into the contract. Yeah, maybe that does stick in the back of your mind, and maybe it hurts the Giants' chances in the future. Who knows?
You have 48 homers for the Giants at home, 61 on the road, 109 total, which puts them about 22nd or 23rd, I think, in Major League Baseball. So not a big power year anyway, but the road home split. If I'm a slugger, you know, and I see Jorge Soler with four home runs through two-thirds of the year at home, and I wonder what he does in Atlanta if he doesn't have, you know, 10 more home runs in him the rest of the way.
I got duped by a troll on Twitter. Someone pulled up a tweet from like 2021 when Soler hit a leadoff homer when he was leading off for the Braves back that season. Someone quote tweeted the tweet saying, "Oh my God, Jorge Soler just hit a home run in his first at bat again as a Brave." And I started freaking out until I found out that it was an old tweet from 2021. But that all, it would be fitting. It would be fitting if that were to happen. I haven't checked what he finished today, but I did see he was 0 for 2 to begin the day.
Yeah, I'm just checking it right now. Yeah, and he let off. He was 0 for 3 with a walk and a punchy as the Braves beat the Brewers. So
sounds like the Jorge Soler of the Giants, too.
But they had him leading off.
And a strikeout.
He immediately goes to Atlanta and he leads off. Yeah. So obviously he was able to convey that message to them as well and say, "Hey, I like leading off. All right, go ahead, Jorge."
He led off, I think, in their World Series run. It was kind of odd at that time. It feels a little bit more normal now because baseball has changed so much. But 2021 postseason, he was leading off for the Braves. Back out to the phones we go. 888-957-9570. Up next is Nicholas in Martinez. Nicholas, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs, FP, and Grandy. How you doing?
What's up, gentlemen? Great show, man. And the trio that you guys are right now is it's pretty cool to see and interesting at the same time, because if Mark was on the radio, I think his take would be so much different. The Giants would be like a piñata right now. It'd just be crazy. But I did want to piggyback on what Dibs was saying. And yeah, you look at that and you go, wow, how do we even attract a bat, you know, when you trade SLR. And I look at that and I couldn't help but think about Brandon Ayuk in that situation, where maybe the ballpark, be it the ballpark or the scheme or what the Giants are doing, how playing ball for players like that, they just don't fit in the scheme. They don't fit in the playbook. The difference between the two, I think, would be that Ayuk actually has the ability to do that. They just don't throw him the ball. The long ball is not their game. So it might be better for him to leave. Anyways, just wanted to chime in, tell you guys it's a great show. I listen to you guys all the time, man. And I'll take your comments off the air, man.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the comments. Interesting. Ayuk to Soler comparison. Maybe a little bit of Ayuk news, by the way. We can get into that in a little bit. But I'm not so sure I necessarily follow that comparison. Jorge Soler, I mean, he didn't really. If he was hitting home runs, it would be fine. The Giants would love to hit home runs.
Exactly.
And he just simply couldn't do it at this ballpark for whatever reason.
Yeah, for the obvious reasons of the ballpark being very difficult to hit home runs in. And I think that, you know, he goes to Atlanta, which is much more of a launching pad, but the Giants haven't had a lot of productivity from their lineup anyway, even outside of Soler. And so you get him in a spot, and the guy Tyler Fitzgerald doesn't seem to have any problem with the ballpark the way he's been swinging it. But I think Soler just became a victim of the numbers, of the salary, more than he was a victim of his own struggles. That's the way I looked at it anyway.
Is Brandon Ayuk a home run hitter?
No, he's...
I don't look at him as a home run hitter. I look at him as a possession receiver, but that can make a big play. He's a route runner, and he's got great hands. He's tough as nails. He's a blocker, and he's good. I think he signed his deal already.
I'm hoping that breaks here in the next few minutes, but I'm with you based on
the
body language.
You can't just say that. Tell us why you feel that way.
Well, you watched the video online of Brandon Ayuk at camp today shaking Lynch's hand, and then Kyle comes over and daps him up. And if I know body language, or I think I know body language because I made a living out of it, it was a congratulations, man. It was. It was a quick hand, slap him on the back, dap him up. Congratulations, man.
It was not, in my opinion, a farewell, good luck in Pittsburgh. No. You've been traded sort of a moment.
No, that was congrats, dude.
Yes, especially the Shanahan one. The Lynch one was just like, boom, you know, good to see you. And then Shanahan comes all the way over out of nowhere and gives him the double shake and the double pat. And, you know, you could see almost him saying, like, can't wait to have you out here, big guy.
I'm going to go deeper into the weeds. If you've been talking to Lynch on the phone and your agent has for the last week, that's how you shake somebody's hand that you're sick of talking to.
And for the analogy.
And then you go over to the head coach, and the head coach gives you the congrats, man.
Yeah.
That's what that was. I'm sticking to that.
Agreed.
Different.
And hopefully the news, hopefully there is news and it breaks here in the near future. But as far as is Ayuk a home run hitter, they're all home run hitters. Kittle can go deep.
Yep.
Debo can turn an easy catch into a touchdown, and McCaffrey can do it as well. And that's what makes their lineup so potent, because you've got multiple guys who can be home run hitters.
See, I think of a home run hitter like Jerry Rice. Like, he's going to beat you deep. And
Tyreek
he's got
Hill.
That breakaway speed. Tyreek Hill's a home run hitter.
Right.
Like, all those guys can run after catch like nobody's business. All of them. They're all. I'm watching this receivers thing, and I'm watching every night. I think I'm on the last episode. How the hell didn't we win the Super Bowl last year?
Like, jeez, right?
This is the best team, and they're all like together, and they're laughing, and they're joking, and the wives are cool, and the everybody's cool, and Kyle's awesome, and the talent on that field, and you're just watching it going like, I think I texted Willard one night, like, I'm watching receivers, and how the hell didn't we win the Super Bowl? Like, how did we not win that? That team is so good.
Right. McCaffrey fumbles.
I know.
You take the ball.
I've had therapy
for
this.
Stop it. There are.
It was a rhetorical question, Dibs.
Yeah, well, sometimes rhetorical questions need to be answered.
Okay. Answer it.
They had made 7 mistakes, FP on critical plays.
7?
Probably 7.
It was not a lucky 7.
It was an unlucky 7.
Unlucky 7.
That's stupid. Don't say that
I
again.
Finally brought myself to watch the final episode of Receiver, because I knew it was going to end in that heartbreak once again. And I just, it was painful. It was painful.
Do they go to the Super Bowl locker room after when they're all crying and stuff? Does it go to spoiler alert?
Not really locker room.
Okay.
They show the guys walking off the field, and then they cut to like their interviews after the fact with the guys talking about how painful and emotional it was.
Man.
But
I don't know if I can watch that. I'm not.
They show like
I'm not that episode. Far.
They show
I'm not episode 4. Yeah,
they show like the family members up in the suites, like just as the game ends. Like, I can't do this. I'm leaving. I can't watch this. So I'm getting off the field. Like, it was rough.
What's Kittle's wife's name again?
Claire.
She is
on a plus
like unicorn wife.
That whole family is incredible.
She is all about. She's all about we, man. She is the support. And just like it's so cool to see their dynamic.
He might go on the injured list after one of their pregame interactions, though, because she'll get after it, like slapping him
every
and
time
him
she
and
shoves him onto the
every
field.
Every time,
but that's cool.
It's
man.
Awesome.
And Kittle says it's her giving him her violence for the day.
It's just,
that's what Kittle
any,
says. Give me your violence because I need it.
Does she have any friends? Do you have any friends that are just,
sure
like, just like her?
We'll check on that for you.
Pump me up before a show and like dap me up after a show.
We'll check on that all for right. you during the break. All right, we'll come back. We got 1 hour left of Dibs, FP, and Grandy on this Wednesday. We're presented by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromise, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. More Willard and Dibs next on 95.7 The Game.